Oh. Excuse me. Hello? Where are you? Well, the convention's about to begin. What? You're here? Well, we'd really like to see you. Okay. We'll try to take notice. What? Jesus can't use a cell phone? Come on. Give me a break. Welcome. Grace and peace to all of you as we gather in Jesus' name. For it is a spirit that has gathered us together, a rich diversity of persons from a variety of faith traditions and communities. It is a spirit that holds in tension this very threshold moment and the ongoing journey ahead of us in conversation and reflection and getting to know each other and each other's traditions and the spirit among us. This is a moment of anticipation, of anxiety, of course, of questions and questioning, of endings and new beginnings. Here we can begin to ask the question, what does this mean? As we engage in the discernment of our call in this place, this time, deepening our awareness and response to the Spirit's work among us for the life of the world, noticing Jesus among us, listening to the conversations Jesus is having with us and we with each other, learning from him. So, here we are. Any new students out there among us? Please stand so we can see who you are. To you and your families who have journeyed with us, we are encouraged by your presence and anticipate your companionship. Now, I know there's a few returning students among us, so please stand. One or two out there. Yes, your presence, whether you know it or not, has enriched the community that gathers and learns here, and we're looking forward to and anticipating more conversations and learning together. Okay, faculty, you're allowed to stand now too. Faculty, where are you? Now, I noticed that she's not here, and she probably has a good excuse, but we also want to welcome Emily Peck McLean, who is going to lead us in the area of Christian formation, preaching, and worship. But to those of you, other faculty who are here, this mutual sharing of your gifts and the encouragement of spirit on this formative journey is needed, and we're grateful. Well, staff, if it wasn't for you, this wouldn't exist. So staff, please stand. Your attentive care and presence help shape the community in many ways, seen and many unseen. So we are grateful as well. And there are a number of guests here in this room. Would you stand, please, guests? That would be spouses, that would be friends. And yes, other faculty members. Thank you for coming. Now, there is a special guest in the back, I believe, that I will leave at this moment for Michael to introduce. If you would like to do that, Michael, we give you this opportunity.
Right now?
Right now.
Thank you.
It's a gift to have you all among us, enriching our lives and worship experience, and those you will companion with on a regular basis. Now, is there anybody that I missed? Good. I covered those bases. All right. Oh, no, I didn't. We've got to welcome Jesus among us, don't we? I invite you to stand. And we welcome together the Spirit of Christ into our midst as we join our voice and our breath, as we sing and pray, heart and mind, as we listen and reflect, body and soul as we're moved to respond in discerning awareness of the Spirit of Christ's presence in loving grace among us. But even as we gather, we recognize that the world does not go well, and we remember the many places and the people where there is violence, hatred, racism, war, disease, greed. And we hold them before you, Lord, in this moment. Spirit of Christ, make us into a people of transforming love. Open our ears to hear, our eyes to see. And may our hearts burn within us for your will to be done among us and with us because of your exuberant love for the world. Amen.
Is a camera.
Oh, have you felt this thing? What is this contraption? This is not a camera.
It's a camera.
No. Prove it.
Well, see, you see, there's this window here, and you look through the window, and it has little lines in the window so you can frame your shot.
Okay, I'm with you there.
It's very cool.
And then what do? You see, is this the screen where you,
Oh, no. That was the neat part. Then you get film. You have this roll of film, and you take the film and you put it in here, and then you hook it on a little wheel here, and then you close it, and you feel really good about what you've accomplished.
Okay.
And then you put it, and sometimes it's 24 pictures, sometimes it's 36 pictures, and when you're done, you just rewind it.
Okay.
And then you take it to the store, and you give them the film. And they develop it, and like 3 days later.
Oh, what? 3 days later?
Well, if you pay extra, you can get one more process. But then you can look at your pictures, and all you right, throw half of them away, and you keep the good ones.
Okay, all right. Moving on. Yes. Moving on. All right. Oh, the buttercream gang. Well, that sounds really fun. What's that?
That's a VHS tape. You watch movies.
So I do know what this is.
That's a book.
I mean, we still have books.
That's It's a book.
But I am curious why you would buy a book on Ireland. Have you really never heard of Google Maps?
Well, see, what you would do, say you want to go to Ireland.
Okay. So
you get the family back in the car, you drive down to the bookstore, and you get a or the library,
okay.
And you get a book that says Ireland, and you open it.
Yeah,
it's right there, and then it tells you places to go, things to see. It's like magic. It's open.
So you had to carry this around with you in Argentina? You didn't have
your
Wikitude app that
right there with you.
Scanned and told you where the things are you're supposed to look at.
What you would do is, if you didn't have Wikitude or whatever that is, you would have an atlas. And so you want to get somewhere, you would figure out where you are, and then you figure out where you want to go. And then you get a highlighter. And then you take the highlighter and you follow the trail. And if you're really cool, you have one of these pens that has a little wheel on it. And then it tells you how many miles it is. And then when you travel, you get in the car and you hand the map to someone else because it doesn't work to drive and read the map at the same time.
So you don't know what GPS is or
Google Maps? No, your passenger was your GPS. They would tell you where to go and where to get off.
In all of this.
Oh yeah. Well, Siri was not even a twinkle in her parents' eyes.
What? I've seen this on Doctor Who, but I didn't think time travel was possible quite yet.
This is a phone booth.
Well, okay.
This is where the magic happens. See, when you're traveling and you lose your way or the highlighter gets blurry and you can't figure out where you're supposed to go. You find one of these, and then you stop, and you say, it'll be just a minute. Then you open the door, and you walk in, and there's a phone there. And you put in the quarter, and you...
Wait, I'm sorry. You had to carry coins with
you? Oh, yeah, you always had a stash of quarters in the car.
You had to put a quarter in the phone booth to make a call?
Then you call and find out where you go, and then you get out, and you shut the door, and it's there, and you get back in the car, and nothing's beeping at you, nothing's telling you when you get an email,
okay.
And you keep driving, and if you get lost and go in a circle, it's there again.
All right. I'm hearing you, but what if that person wasn't there? Because most likely they aren't going to be there when you call them.
Well, you just hope.
Can you text in this thing? I don't understand.
No, sometimes you would find text in the phone booth, but I can't repeat that here.
Okay. Wow. This is really, really inefficient and frankly dangerous.
Well,
really, if you're driving around in the middle of the night, you have to find a phone booth, and then you're hoping that the phone works?
Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the pages of the phone book are ripped out, and you can't find the number. Yeah, it was troublesome.
I don't know how any of you survived the 20th century. I have to say that.
Well,
I don't understand it.
You know, we did, and there was something reassuring about the permanence of this thing, you know, solid structure. You could hold the book in your hand. You could hold the map as long as you folded it correctly, and it was all right there, and that's what we knew, and it felt good, and it felt right.
I'm going to keep my iPad. It's okay. You can have that stuff.
After Jesus died, but before the disciples realized that the world had changed, two disciples were walking on the road to Emmaus. As they were walking, someone joined them, but they didn't recognize Jesus. As they spoke about all that had happened, Jesus showed them how what was happening now was just a continuation of what was before. He explained how the past was connected to the future, and how even though the world looked different, they didn't need to be afraid or cling to the past. When they came to the end of their journey, the disciples asked Jesus to stay, even though they did not still recognize him. Jesus joined them for a meal. He took bread and broke it and blessed it. And suddenly, in this familiar act, but different setting, they recognized him and knew that the world had changed again. The Emmaus disciples returned to Jerusalem that very day to tell the others what had happened and how they recognized Jesus.
All right. I knew I was getting old, but this is ridiculous. I don't have to come to the seminary convocation to be reminded of how old I... It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Michael King, who is entering his fifth year as Dean of the Seminary and Vice President of the University. Michael was born in the U.S., but raised in Cuba and Mexico. As the oldest son of Aaron and Betty King, the oldest of nine children, and I learned just very recently that his parents failed. Mother wanted, she was mesmerized by cheaper by the dozen, and they only got to nine. Michael came to Eastern Mennonite from Mexico and received his BA degree here and an MDiv from Eastern Baptist Theological Seminary in Philadelphia, now known as Palmer, and his PhD at Temple University in Communications. He's married to Joan Kennerson from New York, and they met here at EMU. She is a consultant in the mental health field. It might be instructive that both of our spouses are psychiatric nurses by background.
There is a reason for that.
I think so, most likely. They are the parents of three daughters and two grandchildren, and we've met the one granddaughter back here. I thought it would be helpful to simply add that in light of the fact that some of you may wonder occasionally if any of us are accountable to anyone, we are holding Michael very accountable. Provost Fred Niss, is he here this morning? I know he thought he was coming. Michael reports directly to the provost, who reports to me. His pastor is Joe Hackman, who is here from Salford Mennonite Church this morning, visiting for a week of vacation. Joe happens to be my son-in-law. And Salford happens to be the congregation that I pastored many, many years ago. So I know most of the members there. So we have a very direct line. That's the congregation that the Kings attend, Michael and Joan, when they are in town in Harleysville. And if that weren't enough, as many of you know, we are next door neighbors. So we have him held accountable in a variety of ways. There are no secrets for the most part. Please help me welcome Michael King.
I do have to applaud that, Lauren, especially since you weren't stretching the truth about accountability, given that here I am on my deck with my family, my granddaughter, last night, and a voice cries out from the wilderness of your house, and it's you asking whether what we're doing over there is acceptable. So thank you for the ways you do monitor. And it is wonderful to have Joe here. I'm actually accountable for my ministerial credentials in Franconia Conference in Pennsylvania, which holds them through direct interactions with Joe. And if you have concerns about my credentials, Joe is here. You will be able to share directly with him about those. A final word I'd want to confess up front before launching in is my dear wife Joan, who is here, has had concerns about some of the items in our basement. And Joan, there are actually two VHS players under the TV. There's actually a VHS rewinder beside the one player. And there is another VHS player in the utility room that I was trying to fix 10 years ago. There's one in the barn where my office is, and there are two upstairs. Mostly they don't work. So we can talk. Well, followers of one, as you heard, who inspired love and loyalty trudge to Emmaus, their faces downcast. They're bewildered, even foolish, as a stranger who joins them puts it. Two ingredients of their story catch my attention. One is their difficulty recognizing Jesus. He is the stranger, the person they're discussing. Jesus was their hope. Now he's dead. Oh, some who investigated rumors of angels saying that he was alive found an empty tomb, but they didn't see Jesus. So on the followers' walk, discussing with Jesus the absence of Jesus. It was while pondering their situation that I saw a PBS video posted by Tony Jones under the title Seminaries, Training People to Repair Phone Booths. Now, because I'm old and we've now had it kind of pushed hard at us this morning, that some of us are ancient, I do remember phone booths. If you managed to find coins for the call, where is Trina? I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but you really did have to put those coins in, and then you'd scrunch behind glass doors until so many were vandalized you had to shout outside over traffic. And I worked in my first pastorate in the 80s in Philadelphia in home repairs while I also pastored, and I remember many a time trying to find one of those machines to call my dear spouse. Now, the credit for what you've seen here goes entirely to all the persons, and I'm not even sure I can name all of them. Kevin probably can. Kevin helped lead a worship team, including Les and Trina and Matt and others whom you've experienced sharing with us this morning. But I had very little idea of the ornate preparations that we're going into this morning until I got here this morning. And I am very grateful to all of you who gave us living visuals of the era of telephones and phone repairs and so much more. Are seminaries repairing phone booths? Partly yes, as some denominational and congregational structures crumble like booths did once cell phones arrived. For instance, some doubt that current structures of Mennonite Church USA, the denomination in which EMS is rooted, will survive. Congregations are leaving MCUSA or threatening to, even as others crave unity. Cell phone-like changes are buffeting most denominations. Sexuality is just one area of change, but often the straw that breaks a structure's back. Certainly, MCUSA is struggling with sexuality discernment. As many of you know, Eastern Mennonite University is itself discerning hiring policy for persons in same-gender relationships and has suspended current policy. During suspension, which I hope deepens a tenderness of spirit and theologizing among us, persons will not be terminated for being in covenanted same-sex relationships and conceivably can be hired. In times like these, what does it mean to do more than teach phone booth repairs? Here I see a link with the Emmaus disciples. We too often fail to recognize Jesus when phone booths crumble. As we confront denominational, congregational, higher education, or theological arrangements too constricting for God's wild and wonderful work among us, we'll sometimes not recognize this risen Jesus, believed dead, even as he joins us. I'd apply this to same-gender relations standpoint. We convince ourselves Jesus is in our understandings. I suspect that's true, because holy sexuality is a matter larger than any of us can fully grasp. We need polities, theologies, biblical interpretations humble enough and gentle enough to allow us to be partly right and wrong. That means being ready to welcome even, maybe especially, those we consider wrong. Now, through proposing peacemaking hospitality even for antagonistic stances, I'm offering my own fallible testimony to seeing Jesus. Maybe a better alternative would be to advocate for the one right theology of same-sex relationships. But might some either-or approaches be phone booths? Might we more easily recognize Jesus by confessing that when most sure we see Jesus, we might be wrong? And when we have no idea Jesus walks with us, this may be exactly what he's doing. I hope for us at EMU and EMS to minimize imposing favorite views of Jesus and maximize opening ourselves to the Jesus we have yet fully to meet. I don't know the precise policies or curricula this calls us toward. At EMS, we work at that together in multiple settings, and I'm not trying to determine precisely the content of that, but I think the quest is one we can together find ourselves moving forward upon. We can together ask which are phone booths and which will help us live with cell phones until their day passes too. And that's part of the scariness of what we experienced here. This is an ongoing process. This phone I've got on my belt is going to look as foolish to my children and my dear granddaughter out there someday as these phones look like to us. Truly, it can be hard to recognize Jesus. Who knows what fresh arrangements we'd dream toward if we believed that? But there is that second ingredient catching attention. Jesus is there. Those Emmaus travelers may think they're living a horror movie, or at best a foreign film so strange they'll never grasp its meaning. Yet what's actually unfolding is wonderful, though it seems to take forever. Emmaus is hours away. This is not just seconds of chit-chat. They walk and walk until finally they've trudged into the day almost over, as they tell the stranger they wish to join them for supper when he seems set to go on. He accepts, and he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then, and it's powerful to think of the physical giving and exchanging and receiving of the bread as the moment this happens, then their eyes were opened. Now they get it. Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? Their story's first ingredient undoes us. It reminds us we know so much less than we think. But its second ingredient rebuilds. This is not a tale to breed cynicism, to encourage doubt in the divine. We face our difficulties recognizing Jesus to see that Jesus is, in fact, among us. We accept our need for something from capital B, beyond, which in the Emmaus story even prevents recognition of Jesus until the right moment to open our eyes. So we need higher education, congregational, denominational, cultural arrangements that nurture hearts burning, that rely on, that trust, that explore, that open themselves to the possibility that, in fact, that living Jesus can still, in our post-phone booth days, have our hearts aflame. In an article on deep trends affecting Christian educations, which is worth Googling, Gregory Jones, slated to be EMS 2015 commencement speaker of all things, and Nathan Jones, I haven't taken the time to look at this carefully, but I think Nathan is probably Gregory's son, highlight seven trends shaping how we work at this. The digital revolution and we've seen some of its effects right here this morning. A multinodal world in which we navigate countless cultural, ethnic, religious diversities out there and in here. And if we began to name some of the diversities right here this morning, we would be able to see that this is not, I see Christian nodding, you're with me on that, this is not a theoretical something out there, this is something that's affecting us every day. Reconfiguring denominations and emerging forms of congregating, questioning institutions, economic stress on Christian institutions. Lauren, there are no economic stresses on Eastern Mennonite Seminary, but I know you deal with some at the university level. I hope that narrative gets carried out somewhere, because the truth of the matter is kind of the reverse, but I'm not sure Lauren noticed that. Shifting vocations of lay people and the lure of cities. So those are the seven trends that they identify. I'd also add such global challenges as ongoing oppression and injustice, rising inequality, structures from which emerge police of one race shooting people of another race, the yearning to cleanse the world of views we hate, even to the point of genocide, and countless canaries in the mine signaling environmental upheavals. For example, Google Lake Mead, Nevada water level, and I do this because I've been to Lake Mead several times. It's an area hauntingly lovely to my mind, but also such a striking and odd juxtaposition between the amazing glory of nature and that big old Hoover Dam, which is the human belief that we can control the beauty. And now if you Google the results, that dam started to fill in the 1930s. Now you can see the bathtub ring of Lake Mead, where the water level keeps dropping and dropping and dropping and is close to reaching the point that it hadn't reached until it first began to fill back when the dam was first built. So just an amazing parable right there in photos of the effects of what's happening in the environment today and of the reality that drought and Colorado River overuse could wither lifestyles near and far. Our learning communities need to be in the thick of exploring how we experience hearts burning amid such trends and challenges. And let me be clear, I don't ultimately mean to be alarmist so much as hope-filled. I tend to see the times we're in as analogous to the tremendous ferment of the Reformation or even the amazing ferment of that first century when the gospel exploded in fresh ways all across the known world. I think that's the type of situation we're in now. I think we see glimpses of working at this in a news report by Laura Amstutz on the 2014 EMS graduates and their commencement. Laura wrote a news article on that, and in it she tells of final year student capstones. And listen to some of what they were working on just months ago. The topics ranged from Jesus, deconstructor, Lord of Parable, God of Madness, King of Graffiti, by Brittany Conley. How's that for a title? Who is now leading a small church plant. And I remember hearing Brittany share that, and she looked at the dean and suggested, you know, Dean King could learn from some of this, and I was with her on that. To the medical model and its creation of unnecessary suffering. Pastoral Responses for Chaplaincy and Beyond by Melanie Lewis, a chaplain. I myself noted as I listened to capstones last spring that precisely as one capstone, Brittany's, highlighted deconstruction gifts, others reclaimed worship practices that form us as Christians when cultural trends unglue us. And I think we met Jesus in both those very different types of projects. Laura observes that in these projects, students have already begun the work that Elizabeth Soto Albrecht, the seminary commencement speaker, encouraged. You are asking how to be church differently, Soto Albrecht said. Sometimes the church becomes a holy bubble that no one can touch. Sometimes we need to burst that bubble. We are not individuals doing our own thing. The church is in the middle of major changes. Lift up your prophetic voices, but always stay within the church. And as one who heard Elizabeth actually give the presentation, Elizabeth originally comes from Puerto Rico, is a Spanish speaker, now moderator of Mennonite Church USA, and also working in seminary life. Elizabeth used the word in her presentation, conéctate, conéctate, stay connected, stay connected. And so she is passionate about the reality that if we stay connected, we can actually achieve change within the church. Whereas, as she puts it, once you are outside, you can't change it. Be the change you wish to see. We worked last year at how to stay within the church amid change when an EMS student became engaged to marry another woman and wished for her full self, including lesbian aspects, to be known with integrity before she graduated. I remember the intensity with which Lonnie and I as deans worked with her to find a way to achieve that, because it seemed to us that her quest for integrity was one that mattered so much, even as we recognized the complexity and the pain to be navigated to find a path for that. We arranged for a lunch. It was set up at tables right here in Martin Chapel, which drew a full house. We clearly named that Mennonite Church USA teaches marriage is for a man and a woman. We invited studying faithful dissent to this teaching, which is in this room and part of our lives as well, right here at EMU and EMS, in MCUSA and other denominations. We sought to provide a gentle space for the telling and hearing of this story, which, whatever our theological perspectives, and they are varied, and they are sometimes quite different, was a peril from the soul through which we could meet Jesus. We also wanted those wishing to see Jesus in a story, for example, of celibacy, to experience EMS as safe. Meeting such conflicting goals is almost impossible. This is one reason church structures are coming unglued. We don't know how to do this work. We don't know how to reconcile opposing convictions of which stories Jesus meets us in. Yet maybe it's exactly in looking for Jesus within what challenges our understandings that we find him. Because those first disciples didn't know how to reconcile what they thought had happened to Jesus with what did, they couldn't identify him. Yet finally they recognized a Jesus bigger than their preconceptions. Maybe we can too, whether in relation to sexuality or any of our confusions as phone booths vanish. I don't know what you experienced as this play was unfolding, but I was struck by what we often read about, and I certainly experience in my own depths, the pace of change is just about too much. And so we really do find ourselves in tremendous need to learn how both to meet Jesus and how not to be so locked into the preconceptions of an era where this is how you connected with people that we no longer know what to do when this is absent. Now, I am convinced that one way we open ourselves to Jesus and wisdom from beyond is to accept our human limits. I mean, that's really the bottom line premise of the Emmaus story. The human limits are part of understanding why at first Jesus isn't recognized, and it takes Jesus breaking through to be recognizably present. Those human limits are among all of us in this room. They affect me. Some disagree with what I'm saying. I think they're partly wrong. If you're like me, and I think I'm probably like you, most of us as human beings, if we think someone else is right, we will share that person's views. I think those of you who don't hold my views are partly wrong, or I would think exactly what you think. But because I also am always partly wrong, I've been inviting and extend the invitation again here this morning, EMS and EMU faculty, staff, and students to look for settings, including chapel presentations, to have opportunity to correct me. If what I'm believing is correct, then in fact I am wrong as well as right, and you do need to correct me, and I need to be learning from you as well as from my own preconceptions. So in the thick of that journey for all of us, on we walk with Jesus, telling him how profoundly his absence bewilders us, until at last our hearts within us burn. In that faith, let's pray. Dear God, the gospel is sufficient unto the day. We thank you that we can see in sources and stories thousands of years old that the quest to know who you are and how you are walking with us is not a new one. We too can learn how to walk. In the name of that very Jesus who makes our hearts within us burn, we do pray. Amen.